Alright, so I'm gonna start off with maybe a less conventional structure to how, and I realize I have a little bit of a hard act to follow from last night. I don't have a crazy intro to Corinne or any of you, an effective one nonetheless, but so I'll tell you first just a little story about something in my life last year that will help you or help us introduce the topic. So last year, or I guess earlier this year, I had been working remotely for a year, and I realized I was too comfortable. I lived in my parents' house, and life was pretty good, and I was getting to the point in life where I should probably get out of that comfort zone. So I decided to move to Maine, where my youngest brother just bought a nice little farmhouse. He's a nuclear mechanic for the Navy. So I moved up there, like, okay, this is cool. I'll venture out a little bit. And I realized something really quickly, and that is that I really hate to be alone. He was gone for most of the time, right? He's in the Navy. He works probably 14-hour days, and then every few days he's got a shift where he stays overnight. So it was great to an extent, but I realized, okay, this is not that fun. And then I realized that's most people, actually. We don't like to be alone. And that's what I want to cover tonight, is the topic of loneliness. Obviously, this was a hard year for most people, right? It's kind of a little bit raw in our minds of what the last year has been. And I have some interesting, the inner nerd in me will give you some numbers. I consider myself a numbers person, so just if you don't like numbers, I still think this is a helpful thing for us to know. So before COVID, they did a couple studies, and they found that 3 out of every 5 people would say that they're lonely, which is a crazy high statistic. 3 out of every 5, and then what's more interesting is if I looked into it more, it's kind of like a rabbit hole of studies, right? And you go into it, and there was not a big difference between men and women. And there was higher, the numbers were skewed a little higher towards younger people. So people your age, primarily in this room. And then they did some more studies after COVID. And obviously this is hard to kind of gauge, because a lot of people aren't overly honest with how they feel about being lonely or things like that. But after COVID, I found, and this is an interesting quote, I think it was phrased in one medical newspaper. It said, and this is how it phrased it, "The struggle to balance literal survival with all of the things that make surviving worthwhile has never been so clear." And then in those early studies, they found that number, the 3 out of every 5 people, that had increased by 20% to 30%. So that's kind of, that makes it what, 4 out of 5 almost, and that's a majority of the people. And I was talking to Ginny Woods yesterday, Rit, nice lady. She phrased it, and I wish I was either recording or had a way to write down the way she phrased it yesterday. She said, "COVID really taught us," and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, COVID taught us a lot about ourselves. It made a lot of assemblies realize how critical that was, the human interactions that we had, and when we lost it, we realized how important that was. And one side note to those studies, and I'm kind of like flooding you guys with random information early on, but a side note to those studies was that most of the people who said they had friendships recognized that none of them were actually that deep. There was just kind of and the way I would put it is maybe, and I've heard it phrased this way, is almost like a happy hour of friendships, or I guess maybe for younger people, like a career fair, where you kind of hop from friend to friend and check, yeah, this is how I'm doing, this is what my week's been like, but nothing really substantial, right? And that hurts a lot of people. So as a society, we're recognizing, okay, and this is where the secular or the medical field will look at this and say this is leading to some concerning things, drug abuse and think higher suicide rates, right? And that's serious. And I think it's fair to say that it's affecting those numbers aren't that's raw data, right? And I think it's safe to say that it affects us as a body of Christ too. So that's what I want to kind of cover, and what I'd like to do is go through three main things with you guys in the next short bit. The first one, probably the least amount of scripture that I have on this, but it's pretty obvious, and that is our phones. And I know this is about what I'm about to say is ironic, but I was scrolling through Facebook the other day and saw an artist had compiled a series of photos to make a point. And in those photos, the first one was a man and woman laying in bed, and they're facing opposite directions, both on their phones. And you can tell there's just a divide there, right? And then it goes through, and there's a family sitting there, and their kid is on the floor, and both parents are sitting there on their phones. And the third one was, I think, a woman in the doorway, slightly less dressed, and her husband's sitting there on the bed on his phone, right? And that was probably the most appropriate way I could describe that one. Right, but my point is that we're absorbed so much in this, and I think it was actually interesting, a couple weeks ago, Mark was complimenting Ben on how much he was enjoying that you were taking a larger part in meeting, and you made a very interesting comment that it almost like the Lord brought to your attention the usage of your time. And so there's an obvious thing, like, sure, if you're on your phone, you're not absorbing the world around you, right? So that's the part where I don't have quite a verse, and I'd love if people think up a verse and can share it with me afterwards that brings that out. But the one that I had was more on your time. And Ephesians 5:15 is the first one I'd like to actually look at for that. And I'll actually read it in the ESV, and that's a side note that I'll give you guys to begin with. If my translation doesn't match yours, I like the ESV for most stuff like this. So it says, "Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is." So I think it's really important. I hate to give you more statistics, but there's an interesting study out there on how much time we spend on our phone, and everyone nowadays has these things that tell you. I had mine this morning tell me how much, and I hate when it does it, but it'll tell me your time has increased this week or decreased this week, and this week it said 3-something hours a day, and I was like, what? I didn't, you know, you just have no, and they have filters now that'll limit your app usage or how much time you spend, and if that's how you operate, then I recommend you do it. But my point in that is, be careful how much time we spend on our phones, right? And it's an obvious one, but it's what leads us to get self-absorbed, and then we kind of lose touch with each other around. And interestingly enough, so younger people recognize actually more often that they have problems with their cell phones. People age or over 35, so if that, I'm just saying that as a warning, they're less likely to recognize it as an issue in their life. So it's just something to be careful of, right? So that was my first point. The next one I have is the idea of needing people and serving people. I heard a podcast the other day where a woman was saying she lost two really good friends during COVID. And she asked them after she kind of lost touch with them, and they made it pretty clear that their friendship was not really going to continue. She asked, like, what was the deal with that? And they said, "You don't need us anymore." And that hit her pretty oddly. And I think that's pretty common. It's natural to not ask for help in life, but I think that's an important part of a friendship and just companionship in general. And then the idea of serving people. What's interesting is that we have a lot of independent movements in our nation, in particular. And I know when I was growing up, Texas was always the state. And no offense to anyone who's from Texas in this room, but we always heard in school, even Texas wants to be their own state. You know, like it's a big push. They feel like they can be independent. And even that term, pulling yourself up from your bootstraps, that originated in Texas, and it kind of is the mindset you can do this yourself, right? And then what's interesting, I just looked briefly in it, and you can think back last year, the ice storm, Texas really needed most of the rest of the nation, right? My point in that just is that there's times where it's hard for us to recognize that we need help, or we don't, you know, we're a little standoffish and we don't want to ask for help, or we don't naturally want to help other people. So I pointed out a couple verses here. The first being, it's the obvious one from Genesis, where the Lord points out, and I'll actually even look at that, Genesis 2:18. Genesis 2:18, and the Lord God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him and help meet for him." And I thought about this a bit, and if you look, you can almost, for the introverts in the room maybe who would argue, well, you know, you don't need that many friends, or sometimes you need space, right? I recognize that. But if you look at this, the Lord gave him nearly everything. If you go back to the chapter before, it's not that he replaced or could replace people with stuff. And that's often what we try to do. It brings out pretty clearly the Lord gave him dominion over everything, even the trees, the plants, literally everything. And if you think of that, he had everything to his disposal. He and it wasn't that he wasn't busy either, right? You could say, well, maybe he just had a lot of time on his hand. That's why he thought that it was that he needed a companion. No, he had the job of naming every animal on the face of the earth. And still, it says that the Lord even recognized that he needed a companion. And what's interesting, I've never actually noticed this before, but if you look in the New Testament, there is a tremendous amount of mentions of the phrase "one another's." It's littered through the books, and I brought out, or I mentioned five of them here that I will read to you guys, or you can follow along if you want. The first one is 1 Thessalonians 5:11. And my focus on this part is more actions. There needs to be an effort, and I love that we covered that even in quite a bit of our meetings today, and Ron covered this morning even encouraging. There's a lot there that goes toward, or that brings out effort on our part. So 1 Thessalonians 5:11, therefore encourage one another and build one another up. There's a tremendous amount of effort that goes into something like that. You actually have to make a point of putting in the time or figuring that out of how you'll do that to the people around you. My next one is Ephesians 4, verse 2. And Ephesians 4, which we just went through Ephesians in our local meetings here, so it's pretty fresh in our minds. And Ephesians 4 has a surprising amount of mentions of one another in it. But verse 2 says, "With all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love." Again, an effort that we have to make on our part. And I found even Galatians 5:13, there's a short phrase in that one. I'm going to warn you, I'm going to hop around a lot to verses, so if you get tired of flipping to them, I'll read it anyway. Galatians 5:13, "Through love, serve one another." And then 1 Peter 4:10, "As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. So that goes more towards what Michael brought out last night even. And again, there's an effort there, serving one another. And then I'll read the last one that I have here. Hebrews 10 and verse 25. Not neglecting to meet together. And this, I know, was a common verse that we brought out a lot during COVID. It became pretty real. Not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another. Again, the encouraging part. And all the more as you see the day drawing nigh. So there's just an idea here that there, part of what makes us draw back is that it's pretty hard to serve one another, and you almost have to recognize the needs of people or recognize your own needs. So I know that's a big, and it's easy for me to just stand here and tell you, yeah, go serve another, right? But my point in this is really to try to be conscious of how we do that. And I think we probably already do it pretty well, if you compare us to maybe the majority of population, right? It's ingrained more into a religious mindset than any other group maybe, but it's something we have to make an effort to do still. And then what I'll give you guys an interesting quote on this that I read a while back, and someone phrased it, and it relates pretty well to this. They said, usually the best parts of life and the worst parts of life involve people. And if you think about through your life, some of the better or the highlights or the lowest spots, they involve people. And sometimes that hurts, right? But there's those moments too that are the best parts. So it's worth really putting in the effort to involve the people around you in this. The next point I have is maybe, I'm cautious in how I phrase this to you guys, but it's because I'll just tell you, we have to maybe take a little more initiative to impose ourselves on people. And I know the way I'm saying that, I don't want you guys to just, I do want you to show up at each other's doors, but I recognize that could be challenging or bothersome. But I want to look at Luke 19, actually, for this one. We all know this story pretty well, Zacchaeus, but I enjoyed recently, if you look, and I'll just read the story, but and then go into it. Luke 19, verse 1. And Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was the chief amongst the publicans, and he was rich. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and could not for the press, because he was little of stature. And he ran before and climbed up into a sycamore tree and to see him, for he was to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him, and said unto him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at thy house. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying that he was gone to be guest with a man that was a sinner. And if you look at this, I think it's helpful for us to use the Lord as an example on this. The Lord pretty much imposed himself pretty hard on Zacchaeus. In verse 5, he just kind of, he comes and it says he looked up and saw him and said, Zacchaeus, make haste. So I would like to maybe pose this to you guys. There's times where we're going to have to look up. We get very self-absorbed a lot of times in either our group of friends or just in ourselves. And I would like to apply this in the sense that there's times where we may need to look up at the room around us and who is maybe sitting there alone, or who is maybe someone we haven't reached out to or we don't know very well. That's someone who could probably use a conversation or something to that effect. And I would like to apply this to not just at showing up at each other's houses, but impose yourself on people in conversation. I know that is maybe awkward for a lot of people to do, but you get to know where someone's struggling or know who they are if you look up from your own world, and we all do it, right? We get pretty absorbed, or we stay within a certain group of people that every Sunday when we come to meeting. And I think it's interesting the idea here that maybe we can look around and see. And then it says, Zacchaeus received him joyfully. So that is the other side of the equation. If someone comes to you or maybe shows up at your door, it might be awkward, right? But maybe the idea is to take that from the Lord and receive them joyfully. And then I think it's important to note here, verse 7, it says, when they saw it, they all murmured. And there's times probably that people are going to murmur if you or if you make friends with certain people or you're really, it depends. Maybe that one is harder to apply. But you might not always get the best reception. So I would just say there's something worthwhile in here to maybe looking around to the people that in our assembly that maybe you don't talk to or something like that, and get to know them. And oddly enough, I'll tell you guys, I went home to my home assembly last weekend, and I hadn't been there for maybe a month, and one guy came up to me and he said, "Hermano, I love you so much, man." And he hugged me, and I haven't been hugged like this since I was maybe 10. He picked me up almost in his hug, and I was just kind of awkwardly like, "Oh, okay, yeah, this is happening." But I kind of stuck with me in my mind, like, man, that like, he's never said that to me, and it really just meant something. I felt like a kid again when he hugged me, but it was really nice. And then I realized afterwards I probably should have told him that I moved, because I was realizing he probably thought I just stopped coming to meetings. I didn't actually effectively tell him that, but it's just something like that could go a long way with someone in your assembly. I looked briefly, and you guys, with all of this, I kind of encourage you guys to maybe dig deeper into this, the numbers, the verses too. But I did kind of a quick glance through most of the interactions that Jesus had with someone. And if you look at it, from what I saw just at first glance, 25% of the Lord's interactions with people were him starting that conversation. And it's just interesting. There's going to be times where we need to go outside our comfort zone and start that conversation with people. And so that is my second point. My third and last, and I know I'm probably not going to take the full hour, but my third point is that sometimes we're going to have tough conversations. So I brought out the verses, the one another's verses before, that are more actions for each of us to do and an effort almost on our parts. But then there are plenty of other one another verses that are really a mindset for us or a conversation. And we live in a kind of an interesting time where if your job gets too tough, it's pretty easy to just pick up, and I realize I'm saying this as I've just done this, but where you can just pick up and move to a whole new area and start a new life. And a lot of people do that, and it's I'm not saying that's exactly what I did, but a lot of people do this and just pick a whole new friend group in a whole new city. And it's very easy in our culture nowadays to just find a new area when things get tough, right? And that's easy for us to do on a spiritual or an assembly level too. If things get awkward between you and someone in your assembly, it's easy to just kind of avoid that person and move on. So the first verse I had was in Colossians 3, verse 16. And there's just that short phrase there, admonish one another. And I will tell you, that is a hard thing to do. I had to do this for someone that I love dearly recently, and it took me a month to work up the courage to actually have that conversation. And it's a hard, hard thing, and it's necessary, but it's what keeps you from dividing. And I will say that that month between then was a pretty distant month between me and that person. And that's kind of what happens, right? It's a natural aspect. So it's something that's not easy to do. And I'll give you a couple more here that are just really tough things for us to do as people. Romans 12, verse 16, the phrase there, be at peace with one another. Again, a really hard thing to do. It's a mindset that we have to consciously make. And I know this became even harder during the last year. Everyone has their own substantiated views on how things should be, and it's really hard for us to be at peace with one another. It's just natural. We come from different angles or different upbringings on what we feel is right, and it's really hard for us to make that conscious mindset to be at peace with one another. There's a couple mentions of this next one, Philippians 2, verse 2, and I think even in 2 Corinthians 13, it says, be of the same mind one toward another. That goes along even with the point I just made earlier. Again, just a very hard thing for us to consciously make sometimes. I remember even in our brothers' meetings, there's times in Mount Tabor, people came from a different perspective, right? And it's, again, it's just our natural human characteristic to kind of fight for our way of how we think or how we think it should be done. And it's hard for us to be of the same mind, but that's an important and an essential, I would say, part of our assembly life. The next one, Romans 12, verse 10, says, give preference to one another. That's even harder. Where you think you're right, and that probably goes along with it, but then you consciously make the point to give preference to the other side or the other viewpoint. next one I had was Galatians 6:2, bear one another's burdens. This one may be more of an action too, I recognize, but it's often a conversation, right, where someone brings something to you, something struggling, and I want to maybe dwell on this more than some of the other ones. We tend, and it goes to my point on this entire section, we tend to avoid being real with each other because we're afraid, and if you look even at the some of the root causes of how the medical field views what is the root cause of loneliness, that people think they are not worthy or something to that effect, where people are going to think something of them. So they're afraid to be their true selves when they're with their friends. And actually a study was done, I think this was after COVID, and they were researching how many true companions do you have that you can confide in. And that's a level that's kind of above what your average friend would be in your circle, right? Someone you can confide in, and most people said zero, which is kind of shocking to an extent, but concerning. Most people have zero people in their life that they can confide in. And it's maybe more so in an assembly view where you think people are going to judge you or think differently of you if you bring a burden to them or something you're struggling with. And I will tell you that there have been a couple times in my life where I was struggling with something and I went to a couple friends, and what a difference it makes to just talk through something, even something that you're mulling over in your mind or whatever, or something that you haven't looked at in a way that someone else would. And I've gotten some critical help from my friends in times like that so that I would almost emphasize to each of you. It's easy for us to not be real with each other, but I even listened to a church that I follow in, or like a podcast almost, in Texas, and they did a
they did a exercise in their church where they went around the room and said, write down something you're grieving and or something you're struggling with. And all these people were really willing to write that down on a piece of paper. And then they said, okay, now read that to the person next to you. Almost no one wanted to go to that next step of telling the person next to them what they were dealing with or what they were going through. And that's pretty natural for us. We like to kind of keep things bottled up, but then we don't get to know the real stuff that we're a body of Christ, right? And it's an important part of I would just emphasize that we really need each other. The next one, and we talked about this a bit this weekend, there's actually a lot of mentions of this. 1 John 4:7 is probably the one I found, but it's rampant throughout most of the New Testament, and it's love one another. And that too is a mindset that we have to have. There's obviously things about each other that we are not going to love, and we covered that a lot today, right? And I thought that was really reaffirming to us that just the steps that we can take to make an effort to love one another. And then the last, there's another one, be subject to one another. That is kind of the other mindset of that, and I guess that's more to the point of give preference to one another. There's times, and I know even when I was growing up in my assembly, an older brother would kind of make an argument on something, and I thought, man, that is like way too legalistic. Come on, we can't, you know. But that's not the right attitude that we're supposed to have on this. Be subject to one another. There's wisdom, and the Lord has put elders in our assembly in place for a reason, right? And it's actually one of the things that is probably the most concerning about the. There's a lot to be embarrassed about about millennials, but I think this is one of the main things in our culture that is the most undesirable thing, is that we have a tendency to not be subject to our parents, to our president, to our government. Right? It's something that is so prevalent now. But it really distances us from each other, so that's why I've included it as a key part in this. And the last one I have here is confess your sins one to another, and this arguably is probably one of the hardest things that we have to do, and it really brings us closer together. If someone comes up to you and tells you, and I've had this even awkward enough at my first few weeks at my company, right? I naturally deprioritized some stuff, and I realized there's this one guy that I made him look pretty bad by doing it. So I went and apologized to him, and it put us on a different level of comfort. We're now probably there's just a trust there and a companionship maybe that I wouldn't have had before had I not come to him and say, look, man, I'm sorry. I deprioritized this for you, and it made you look bad, right? And I know that's not a sin per se from what I'm applying this, but that's my real life example to you guys. Each of us kind of have things in our life, and it's worthwhile to get on a comfort level with each other and have people that you can confess things to. I'll just wrap things up. I want to emphasize to each of us that what I've kind of brought out here, I don't want anyone to come away from this thinking that there's things that you can't get from the Lord. I don't want to overemphasize relationships with people, right? There's still like as if that's the all sufficiency of your life. No, there is something much greater to that. And I'm sure all of you know that, but I want to really emphasize that as something not to take away from this, right? That our sufficiency. Yes, we are integral to each other, but there's a sufficiency greater than that, that is Christ. And then furthermore, although I'm advocating for you to not be divided and things like loneliness, right? That's a key, and it's a really a key issue in our society right now. But I want to also emphasize there's definitely still an importance to spending quiet time in your life with the Lord. There's easy, and this is the other side of it, where you can kind of feel, and I've done it before, so I know, where you fill your life with too many things so that you're not lonely or you're not feeling like you don't have a social group. You can either work, and I've done it before, work a ton of hours so that you have a structure at your company or whatever, or things like that. There's things that we can fill to keep ourselves from feeling lonely, and I want to really warn you guys against that. There is a value, and the Lord set that as a pretty clear example even in his life. There were times where it said he wandered off to a quiet place or something like that, where he clearly made time to be alone with his Father, and I that still needs to be a big part of our lives. And the last thing I want to maybe point out to you guys, and this is more, so I think we take a lot for granted in this country, right? And maybe that's not thinking, I know we take a lot for granted, and you all know that too. I was listening to a different podcast recently where they were discussing our recent, and this was before it all happened actually, there was an underground church in Afghanistan. And this one church leader was talking to a leader from over there and just kind of getting an idea of what is it like, tell me about that. And the guy from over there said that persecution keeps us pretty clean. We wouldn't survive a day without each other. And they are to the point where they've given up their families to live in a community home with other believers. And it's a key to their survival at this point, is being in a social group like that where they have the support in an underground manner. And then in that podcast, they also talked to that person a week or two after this whole ordeal with the U.S. pulling out of Afghanistan. And they said they pulled out a number of their leaders that they had sent in to help these church groups. They pulled them all out. They didn't want to risk them dying and things like that. And one lady asked them to send her back. And they said, do you realize when we send you back, you're likely going to die? And she said, I know. But the thought of them going through this alone is something I can't bear. And so she willingly went back. And my point in that is, I think we take way too much for granted in this country. And I would just encourage you guys, realize that the freedoms we have here, we've talked a lot about it, even this weekend, what I don't normally consider an oppressive nation, but now it's seeming that way in Canada. And things like that, it's important for us to pray for people in those areas and then recognize that we have a freedom here to come together like this and things like that that would keep us from, or keep people in our church group from getting lonely. You realize that people in other countries give up nearly everything, including their life, to keep those people in their church community from being alone.